You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now. Yeah. He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. Two hat tricks in four games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats? Modge-podge.
Hodgepodge?
Hodgepodge.
Modgepodge.
Yeah, there's a modgepodge. Whole modgepodge of rumors.
This is a transfer modgepodge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are now listening to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com and SiriusXMC Channel 85. I am Andrew Wiebe. With me, David Goss. Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle, here in the broom closet, calling all the way out to, well, the Octagon, which, I don't know if we can really call it the Octagon anymore. It seems the fighting has died down, Doyle, so I'm a little hesitant. I think I may have to switch that up on you.
I've left the door open for this particular episode of our wonderful show, and there is a chance that Taquito will show up at any moment and just start mauling General So.
So wait.
Napping lazily on the window.
General So gets to stay with you. Why, and why is Taquito booted? Or do you give them different privileges? Does one get to be in on Mondays, the other one on Thursdays?
Oh, General So is the favorite. She's a very good girl. Taquito's a very bad boy. So that's just what it comes down to. I think it's good parenting on my part to let the cats know which one is the favorite and which one I despise.
Gotcha.
I want him to test himself and find another level of being a house cat.
This is the sort of man management that we saw in the first legs of the conference semifinals, I think. Playing players off each other, trying to figure things out. Look, we're headed to the second leg. If you're listening, you know that. Sunday's another really big day in the 2016 Audi MLS Cup playoffs. It's, once again, about 10 hours straight, so get the coffee pots ready. Make sure you got the snacks on hand. Look, it starts at 2 p.m. Eastern, Colorado and the LA Galaxy on ESPN and TSN. It rolls on at 4 with the Red Bulls and Montreal Impact from Red Bull Arena, also on ESPN and TSN. Then it's NYCFC and Toronto FC, 6:30 p.m. Eastern on FS1 and TSN. And then finally, the nightcap, also on FS1 and TSN, Dallas and Seattle. That one is at 9 p.m. 1-0 leads for both LA and the Impact, a 2-0 aggregate lead for Toronto FC, 3-0 aggregate lead for the Seattle Sounders. We'll talk about the scenarios. We'll talk about it all. We'll also talk to Kurt Larson of the Toronto Sun, one of our favorites here coming up. He has been, he has been the Taquito of MLS reporters this week. He has been riled
he
up.
He always is.
He's been trying to fight. We'll ask him what he thinks about being compared to a angry house cat when he jumps on the line. But he'll tell us all about Toronto and what they're doing here in the Big Apple, maybe in the Bronx on Sunday. Let's start with the Eastern Conference. We're going to start with this 4 p.m. game, and we'll hit the West in the second segment. Red Bulls, Montreal, ESPN, and TSN, as I said. All the coverage right here on MLSsoccer.com. Just a reminder, before the game starts and after they finish, myself, Kellen Rowe, Russ Thaler will have all the pregame and postgame action for you on MLS's Facebook account. So tune in for that one, as well as all the games right here on SiriusXMFC Channel 85. So if you're driving around, maybe on a road trip, I don't know what you do on Sundays, you can tune in. You won't miss the action. Now, Dave.
I just got alert.
Yeah,
I just got
startled. He was quite startled there. Yeah. There has been some blowback on you.
Definitely said something.
You said that the Red Bulls didn't have any, quote, difference makers in the final third.
And two MVP of
they
the
just
three
have two
MVP finalists.
Just two MVP candidates.
Are attacking
the,
players for New York Red
so
Bulls.
I know what you were trying to say, I think.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna let you come back on this one.
Words aren't my specialty, but I think what I was trying to say was that I didn't think that they had anyone who had the creativity and skill to break down a compact defensive block in the final third. I don't know that they have anyone who's a dribbler or sees those tight passes consistently that other teams do have. And
you don't think that's Sasha Kljestan on the passing side? He's maybe more what?
I think Sasha Kljestan, and I think a lot of the Red Bull players are fantastic in open play. I think they're fantastic when the field opens up because all of them are in great shape. All of them understand their system to perfection, which are all compliments. They're all great soccer players
right.
In that sense. It's a different skill set, that natural flair that you see from a Diego Valeri, from a Nacho Piatti.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Doyle disagrees. All so right. I
this
think
is just the dumbest thing anybody's ever said on this show, but
wait,
I'm going to let you finish.
Hold on. There's been a lot of dumb things said, and I don't think this measures up to some of the things that have been said.
Well, yet. We'll see, because on Sunday when they score four goals and Sasha has three assists and BWP scores three goals, it will look exactly
the proof
what Doyle
will be
said.
In the pudding,
yes,
so to speak.
But yeah, that's I. That if that makes more sense,
it makes more sense. Doyle, you laughed. You have to be the one who does some rebuttal here.
It makes less sense. The Red Bulls don't play in the open field. The Red Bulls play the most compact game because they turn the opposing team over in their own half more than any other team in the league. So what Kleshin doesn't do are the searching 45, 50-yard through balls that you get out of a Ladero or a Diaz or a Benny Failhaber. And I agree with you. He's not a second forward in the way that Diego Valeri is a second forward. But again, nobody plays in the open field more than the Portland Timbers. They were a bunker and counter team last year when they won MLS Cup. And they played that way for most of this year as well, and Valeri was great. The Red Bulls are all about playing in tight spaces. They're all about compressing the game for the opposing defense and then actually dribbling or playing the ball into the teeth of that recovering defense and then splitting two defenders with a pass and like basically a slip pass. That is what Kleshin is best at. So I think, look, I hate to just rip you to shreds here on the show, Gassman,
that's
but I think that this is something we see habitually from fans of the game in the U.S. We consistently underrate the creativity of our own guys, and it's not just you. I mean, if you look at Metro Fanatic and other Red Bull, other New York fan boards, for the last 2 years, they've been saying, "Oh, we need to get rid of Kleshin. We need a more creative South American player," and it's just. Like to me, it just boggles the mind because it's like if you watch the games, you're seeing one of the most creative overall passers in the league. And because of that, he led the league in assists and chances created from open play. And he does so by doing the very thing that you just said he does not do.
Now, hold on. I think there was something lost in translation here because I'm sitting here. I'm the moderator. I don't have a gavel. I don't have, like, one of those powdery wigs.
Well, moderators don't right now.
Well, judges might. I'm not a judge, though, obviously. I think there's something lost in translation here because when I heard you say open field, I didn't envision open field like the Timbers might play in. I didn't envision open field like Piatti might get in or Mateo Moncosu might get in or Domo Duro might get in this game. I was thinking of a disorganized defense, one that's playing out of the back and isn't organized and
maybe
set
one that's
and
just
ready for you to come to them and trying to force you into the right spaces. Kleshin, I don't disagree with you, Matt, at all. Kleshin thrives in tight spaces, but he also thrives against defenses that are scrambling a little bit.
That maybe have just turned the ball over and one is out of position or maybe has no support because they just turned the ball over when their team moved up the field.
Right. That's where I'm seeing that gap between the two, and I think you guys are talking at each other maybe and not talking to each other.
Which is perfect for a debate because that's the nature of debates in this country right now.
Yeah, it is.
But yeah, I agree with everything Doyle said. I just think the term tight space, what I'm talking about is you're on the top of the 18 with three defensive midfielders around you, the back four in position behind you, and your own team in the area as well, which loses spots. I think Kleshin turns a guy over, great feet to get the ball out of his own feet quickly and perfectly into the path of BWP. That's what they are so good at throughout the season. And he weights that ball perfectly. And like you said, in tight spaces, he's able to get the ball off the defender's foot and off of his own foot quickly, whether it's two touches, three touches, one touch. That's phenomenal. I still, like I think Weeby was trying to explain, I think that that's a little bit of a different situation in a different scenario.
So the proof will be in the pudding. We know that. This is something that we'll see on Sunday. I'm curious about what else we're going to see. It could be Didier Drogba. He's apparently back in training. They're saying he could be – I think there's no other option other than a super sub for him probably through the rest of the playoffs based on health, based on the way this team is playing, based on the fact that this could be their last game. They just have that 1-0 aggregate lead. The Red Bulls at home against Montreal, at home in general – are pretty much dominant. 13-2-2 this year in the regular season, and of course they had some bad results early on that skewed that a little bit. Montreal has come to Red Bull Arena 7 times in their history. They've lost all 7 times. They've scored just 7 goals. They've had 21 scored against them. Doyle, do the Impact have a chance? Who would you be wagering on? If I was going to say, look, General So is at stake here.
You can put 5 Schrute bucks on it if you like.
I think it's a coin flip. I really do. And it's partially because Montreal are going in there with an advantage. And it is. 1-0's not huge, but if they score 1, New York's got to get 3, and that's tough. So it's partially that. And it's partially, like, if you just look at New York's history in these games, they've played 9 playoff games all time at Red Bull Arena, and they've only gotten 1 result good enough to see them through no extra time. That was 2-0 over DC back in 2014. And the other issue is Bradley Wright Phillips. He was magical on those 2014 playoffs. He scored 1 in 5 playoff games since. And maybe that's getting to him, and maybe that's what we saw a little bit last weekend in front of net in Montreal.
You hate to connect history with it, because as a fan, you want to think every year is different. But I think what Doyle's saying, you've seen the issues year after year for them at home in the playoffs, and BWP misses the chance versus Montreal. I mean, if they're tied 1-1 right now, there's no question that New York Red Bulls are sitting pretty and probably going to go through. So that just one touch is really what changes the entire conversation.
And they had those opportunities. You could be like, one, it's not like they were completely shut down. Mm-hmm. BWP had a couple moments in the final third that were not up to his normal standard. The one that he tries to chip over Bush, the one that he somehow contrives to not even put on frame at the back post. I mean, they had their chances. There's no doubt about that. Still, 1-0, they got to come back from it. Mateo Mancosu may be injured in training, maybe not. He came back out, so maybe a little mind games being played there by Mauro Biello. But I think both these teams know who they are. And I don't think either of them, maybe unlike Patrick Vieira, maybe unlike Oscar Pereja, are going to change that in this game. They're going to come out. The Rebels are going to press. The Impact are going to bunker and break. It's a game that I'm really excited for. We'll see what happens. 4 p.m. Eastern, ESPN and TSN. Check that one out, Red Bulls in Montreal. Before we get to Kurt Larson, the Toronto Sun, let's talk NYCFC against TFC, 6:30 p.m. Eastern on FS1 and TSN. Good luck getting from Red Bull Arena to Yankee Stadium. We've been looking at the numbers, at the train schedules. New York Marathon is going on that day, yeah. I believe. So you're probably hosed. It's probably going to be pretty impossible to make that trip, but I'm sure some of you will try. Pirlo is not in full training. It does not look like he'll be playing in this game. But the big news, and Kurt, I'm sure, will harp on this, no suspension, no ban for David Villa after that little kick out on Armando Cooper. Michael Bradley says he's okay with this. He's actually happy about it, in fact, if that trend continues the next season. He thought there were maybe a little bit too many retroactive punishments meted out by the disciplinary committee this season. Do we have any strong opinions? I know Kurt will have one, so I figure we might as well get ours out there before he comes in here and scorches the earth.
Ben Bear has some hot takes for it.
Oh, boy. Ben
Bear's hot take is that if it was anyone other than David Villa, nobody would even have noticed it. If it was Andoni Iraola, nobody would have been calling for a suspension. But because it was the star, the MVP candidate, everybody jumped on it, noticed it. There were conspiracies posited online and elsewhere.
MLS conspiracies, you don't say.
Yeah, right? I can see both sides. Personally, I there was no way David Villa was going to get suspended.
No, I agree. So
it's done.
If it was more malicious, I could maybe see it. But it really, the contact there wasn't huge. I know he and Armando Cooper have been going at it, but to me, I'm okay with it. I want to see the best players play in the biggest game. So ultimately, the final product.
But if they don't deserve to.
No, I agree. But look, if he brought him down or hurt him, or it was really with force and it seemed violent more so than it was, sure. But in this case, I'm okay with it. I don't think it's a huge deal. Kurt Larson probably disagrees. We might as well bring him on now. Kurt, how's it going, man?
What's going on, boys?
Boy, I thought you were going to come in a lot hotter, Kurt. We were expecting it from all that. You had some Twitter tough guy stuff going down.
You guys know me. I'm always level-headed and always never coming in too hot on any on any takes or any opinions I have.
Never. We actually have a hot take hat that we have here at the office now, and we may have to make a copy and send it out to you because I think you'd look good in it, man. It's wide brimmed. It's kind of that 70s look, maybe a little bit of felt. How do you feel about that?
I don't know. I'm kind of like a 90s guy where I like to do the folded brim. I like to fold it down, maybe put a fishing hook in the bill.
Oh, okay. All right. We might have to. We'll get one special ordered and get it right out to you.
Yeah, you know how that is, man. I'm from Kansas. So are you.
I know. You probably curve it really nicely and maybe get a rubber band on that thing.
I have no idea what either of you are talking about right now.
Just a little Midwest catch-up here, Dave. You East Coasters don't know about this stuff. Let's talk about the Via Play real quick, Kurt, before we get to the rest of TFC and the job at hand. You've been pretty stout in your opinion in saying that he should have been suspended. Walk me through that and walk me through what Toronto were saying about it.
Well, I mean, first of all, I think we all agree that based on you know, previous incidents that the disciplinary committee has looked at this season, Armando Cooper's, I think Perez was sent off for something similar. Josie Altidore was sent off and suspended last year for kicking out in a similar incident. I just think based on precedent and what you've done this season, the disciplinary committee probably should have done the same thing and suspended a player for what I saw as a violent act. That's why the committee agreed it was a red card. I'm not really sure how they came to the conclusion that it wasn't reckless in nature or whatnot. But, you know, maybe it's finally time to turn the page and move on. I think the club didn't really get to receive a suspension, although I think they thought he deserved one.
So where do they stand now? They're training here in New York City. I assume you're either out in the Bronx or in New Jersey right now. Any issues for Toronto FC ahead of this game? I mean, from all intents, all reports, I'm not hearing injuries. I'm not hearing question marks. They feel settled.
Mostly healthy, I think. Steven Betashore did sit out of a training, so he's kind of the question mark for the weekend. I'm not sure if it was from that kind of clumsy tackle he was on the end of from Mikey Lopez in the first leg, but he sat out of training, so Mark Bloom could slide it at right back in that 3-5-2 system or right wing, if you will. But other than that, pretty healthy, and I think they're feeling confident going in with all their pieces.
Kurt, emotionally, the way this team operates, is this the type of team that needs this, is going to get fired up because of the Via stuff? Is this the type of team that wants to ignore that type of stuff and stay level-headed? How do you expect them to try and emotionally go into this?
You know, I think on camera they probably say they're ignoring all the sentiment and being shut out of the MLS awards for the most part, and you know, the disciplinary committee making some strange decisions. But I think when you talk to these players and even the front office today, which I did, they're actually happy being underdogs and feeling like it's up against everything's against them. And this week they've kind of given out the quote of it's Toronto against the world or Toronto against everybody, which has kind of stuck here in Toronto with the Raptors and Blue Jays and whatnot. We always feel like everybody's against us for some reason. But they use that as motivation, and I think they're going to use the David Villa decision as motivation. And Jovinko not being on the MVP finalist kind of card and so on. So yeah, you know, I think they are going to come in as an underdog and come in with motivation.
We'll get to Jovinko in just a second because I think we probably share the same opinion there, and that's absolutely insane that he's not one of those three. But underdog, Kurt, they're up 2-0. This is a team with Giovinco, the reigning MVP, Michael Bradley, Josie Altidore. The rest of their lineup is, I mean, you can, in MLS terms, you can call it stacked. Where are they getting underdog from?
Well, I think it's whatever you want to do to motivate yourself. I mean, quite frankly, I had them reaching the Eastern Conference, at least final, playing the Red Bulls before this playoff tournament started. But I think the underdog or the everybody against us comes from just the fact that they're Canadian, and a lot of people here in Toronto always seem to think that the big bad Americans in New York City are always out to get them. So whatever motivates the fans, the team feeds off that, and right or wrong, I think whatever motivates you is what gets you through.
Those fans, we saw that building absolutely explode in the first leg on those two goals. What's the vibe like in the city? What's the coverage like? How are the fans feeling as they go into the second leg?
Are they going to travel? Do you expect a big group at Yankee Stadium as well?
Yeah, I'm expecting, you know, anywhere from 300 to 400 fans down there, I think, from TFC. But going back to Goss's original point there, or original question, you know, I wrote a column 2 or 3 months ago just about how this team I didn't feel was getting, you know, the amount of support and the amount of attention it deserves in the marketplace. You know, I think that can be said for a lot of MLS teams across this league. But you know, specifically Toronto, where the team's been covered and followed pretty well for a decade. And finally, the team was good and had really good players and MVP caliber players and still wasn't getting the kind of coverage and attention it deserved in the city, despite being on a good run and at one point being in first place in the Eastern Conference. And I think that column actually started kind of a conversation in the city, where radio stations were kind of having me on and talking about it a little bit more. And, TFC continued to win. And now it's something bigger than I think we've seen in the city, at least since 2007, 2008, when TFC kind of exploded on the scene. So, you know, you're seeing a lot more highlights on TV. You're seeing TFC kickoff highlight shows on TSN and Sportsnet. You're seeing, you know, breakfast TV have on players, and it's really becoming something pretty big. And I think if they can get past this, you know, this second test in New York City, I think we're going to see something special, especially with 2 weeks to promote that conference final game.
Kurt, I just want to say I appreciate you making the attempt to not be railroaded by Andrew Wiebe and his unprofessional ability to host someone on this show.
No problem. I'm used to it, man.
Oh, man. I did. You know what? I did tag on there. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Let's talk Giovinco. I have some theories on this, and I'll get into them later in the show as to why he didn't make this. What do you make of this? I mean, it boggles my mind. This is the best player in the league. This is the most productive player in the league. And I don't know how you can have two players from the same team in that. I know it's the voting, and then that's how you got to those three, and those are the three finalists per the voting, but it just seems almost criminal.
Well, I mean, and just to show I'm kind of unbiased on the subject, Bradley Wright Phillips is for me the MVP this year. I think 24 goals is fantastic, and just his ability to finish off plays and the difference he's made in New York has been great, especially what he's done the last 3 years. I know this is a 2016 award, but he's just been fantastic. So first and foremost, Giovinco was my second pick for MVP, but, you know, like you said, for him not to be a finalist is pretty outrageous. You know, back-to-back 30-point seasons, that's never been done before in the history of the league. I believe he had the highest percentage of goals produced by his team this year, 63%, I think. He contributed to 63% of TFC's goals, whether it be a goal or an assist. That's pretty fantastic. If you look at why this happened, you know, it's voted on by players as well and media and I believe some team staff. It's my understanding that he received a pretty high percentage of the vote from other media in the league, and I think he might have lost out on a few of the other percentages, whether it be from the players or coaching staff. But I think that's what you have to look at. And like I said, these awards though are there for us to talk about in fodder. It's not the biggest deal ever, but like I said too, if it motivates the team, then maybe it'll be a good thing for TFC in the end.
Are there any of the other awards that people in Toronto or around TFC thought that they have people in the running for? I think mainly we would talk about Coach of the Year or Drew Moore and Defender of the Year.
Yeah, I mean, Greg Vanney, I think should have been in the conversation for Coach of the Year, and I think he was at one point in the season. I think Drew Moore is the bigger one. Started 32 games for this team. He actually turned around a team defense where TFC was one of the worst in the league, if not the worst, last year, which was a big reason why they failed in the end in the playoffs. And turned it around to be one of the best defenses in the league, I think conceding the second least amount of goals. So when you have a guy who plays that many games, starts that many games, it's that big of a turnaround and has this team, you know, going doing good things and going into the playoffs in the form they're going in there with, I think you can make a case for Drew Moore, especially since I believe Matt Hedges only started something like 26 games. And for me, that's not enough.
There you have it, Kurt Larson. I have two predictions I want you to make here, Kurt. First, Toronto FC, will they move on to the conference championships to face either the Red Bulls or the Impact? Second, will Michael Bradley be in a TFC uniform in 2017?
The first one, I'm going to stick with my original prediction before these playoffs start and say, yes, TFC will get through. I don't think it's going to be easy. It's 2-0 right now in the first leg, but these things are never easy, especially if New York scores a first goal here on Sunday. The Bradley thing, I'm not going to give you a yes or no. What I'll say is, where there's smoke, there's fire. Where there's interest, I think TFC is going to listen. And if the deal's right and if Bradley's interested and, you know, if TFC wins a championship this year, then maybe it's something Michael will look at. But I don't think anything's been decided on that. And I don't think they'll take a really hard look at that until the season's over.
There you have it, Curtis Larson. Kurt Larson, S-U-N on Twitter. You want to follow him for all those good things. I'll get the hat in the mail, man. I got one at home that just has your name written all over it. So look out for that one. Big thanks for coming on, man. I honestly have a hat that I'm thinking about sending him. I probably won't. I wear it all the time.
One of your Kansas hats?
Got sweat stains in it, you know, from working on the combine.
Is this a baseball cap?
Yeah, it's a baseball cap.
What is the hook?
You have a hook that you can put on the bill. If you can't envision it, I just can't explain it to you. Dwyer, let's talk NYCFC really quickly. moving on. We can't waste all day on these things. Kansas can wait. How do they fix this? They're down 2-0. Patrick Vieira, we talked about it. He went a little bit hesitant, went defensive. It didn't work out for him. There were some reports this week that perhaps the players weren't happy about that, that maybe 9 to 10 of them went to him and said, hey, well, today all the players are saying no way, that was made up. But what does Vieira do? He's got license to do whatever he wants. He said it himself. Where's he go?
I think he's got to go back to what got them into the playoffs in the first place. They have to look. They know that TFC is going to come out and press them, and they just have to be brave and try to play through that press. It is risky. It is difficult. It is especially problematic because one goal from TFC means NYCFC's got to get four. But they don't have any other options. They can't bunker for 90 minutes. They're just not good enough to do that defensively. And I mean, that means that you got to go out and you got to try to get one early and you got to control the tempo. And you got to play your best players. There's no excuse for not having Tommy McNamara out there. There's no excuse for taking David Villa off. There's no excuse. If Frank Lampard can go from the start, you play Frank Lampard for an hour, and then, you know, at that point you make a decision about his fitness. But that's, you can't do what you did last week, period.
Lampard says that he's fine. Lampard actually made it sound like they've kind of been holding him back to be safe, which means that he should be ready to go. And like Doyle said, he should be starting, and he's the difference maker in terms of he's the one that helps Villa a lot. And he opens things up, and he makes runs that you don't expect, pops up in places. I mean, he's been fantastic when healthy. And then I think Pirlo's their assist leader, mm-hmm. and he was out last game as well. They said he's training to the side. Vieira hopes that he'll be in full training by the end of the week. But all of those players have to be out there. McNamara has to be out there, and you have to go for it. The one thing I think you're going to walk away from is, however this game ends, I think NYCFC fans are going to say, I wish we'd played that way for two games. Because they're going to go for it in this game. It's going to be high scoring, but you know, New York has won high scoring games, but like Doyle said, they can't afford to give up a goal. So what's right. worked for them in the regular season may
high
not
scoring
work
with
for
some
them.
Away goals and losing at BMO would have been cool.
Would have
all
been great.
Good. No worries about that. Yeah. Now we have something to build off of. They don't have that. They're down 2-0. Headed back to Yankee Stadium, 6:30 p.m. Eastern on FS1 and TSN, TFC and NYCFC. Before we go to the break, before we get to the Western Conference, really quick, guys, what's our Eastern Conference championship going to be? I'll start with mine. I think the Red Bulls find a way to get it done. I think they get past the impact. I think they're into the conference championship. And then I think Toronto FC hold serve. I just don't think NYCFC can pitch a shutout at home. It's not going to happen for them. That makes the task extremely difficult. In the final, conference final, that is, TFC, Red Bulls. That matches my original bracket, so I'm feeling pretty good about that.
For me, it's the Canadian Derby. I think both Canadian teams advance on aggregate. 2-1 win for the Red Bulls, so 2-2 aggregate and road goals, and 3-1 win for NYCFC, which means 3-3 aggregate. And once again, road goals.
There you have it.
I picked before the playoffs started, New York, Toronto, and I think I'm going to switch over and go Montreal, Toronto as well.
All right. Plus 4-0-1 Derby. We'll
I've already
see what happens.
Tripled down on this whole.
You have.
Montreal
yeah, you kind of have. 4 p.m. Eastern starts it off in the East. Red Bulls, Montreal on ESPN and TSN, and then NYCFC and TFC at 6:30 Eastern on FS1 and TSN. Those games right here as well. SiriusXM FC, Channel 85. With that, let's go to the break.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Chicago, Chicago, that toddling town. Chicago, Chicago, I will show you around.
Back now on Extra Time Radio. Andrew Reby, David Goss, Matt the Armchair Analyst, Doyle. We play that for, you know, I don't know why. I can't figure it out. I definitely didn't spend almost my entire night waiting for that game to end last night. When the rain delay came in the World Series, I thought, boy, I wasted my time. But as it turns out, the Chicago Cubs get their first World Series championship in 108 years. Quickly before we get the Western Conference, what MLS team is most likely to have a prolonged MLS Cup?
I think it's
streak without it. I'm not going to say that the Chicago Cubs, because 108 years is a long time. But
well, the curse
right.
for New York, I think, is the first thing that comes to
mind.
The
Red Bulls, the, mm-hmm. the curricula there.
Yeah. Does anyone else pop out?
Yeah. Nobody has a curse.
Right.
I mean,
Revs?
It's tough to say. I think we need to go another decade before we start looking at some of the original teams like the Revs. That just haven't been able to get it done. I mean, maybe Dallas. Maybe Dallas has this good 5-year run, but they never get over the hump. And then we start talking about real long-term curses. But this is, you know, nobody was talking about a Cubs curse in 1928, most likely. So we got to give it a little while.
Or they were, because people in 1928 were probably obsessed with curses just in general as a conversation.
Everything is cursed. Oh, my God. Yes, it was a time of curses.
Although it was the Roaring Twenties.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, man.
Flappers
just,
and all.
Oh, history lesson from David Goss here. Two teams in this playoffs, I think the only two teams, in fact, that have won the Cup, face off at 2 p.m. on Sunday. That's the Rapids and the LA Galaxy. That one's on ESPN and TSN. You should definitely watch it to get your day started.
Weeby's actually 100% sure those are the only two teams, because someone emailed in last week, Trevor Bond. Thank you, Trevor.
Yeah, well, look, you know, I think I could figure that out myself. But, Trevor, I do appreciate your email and guidance in these troubled times for us. This is a big game for Colorado. They're trying to put a not a bow quite yet, but I think it would be validation on their season here. Second the Supporters Shield, kind of out of nowhere at the top of the Western Conference, and really surprising a lot of people all year long. LA Galaxy, meanwhile, the race to Sace, we know all about that. This is a championship team. They don't really care that much about the regular season. Now they have an opportunity to go to Colorado, where goals are generally not aplenty, and finish this thing off. They have a 1-0 lead on aggregate. What are the tactical themes of this game, Doyle? Because I have a feeling this one's going to be tight and tactical.
Yeah, I think that Colorado needs to do a better job of preventing LA from getting into a rhythm, specifically with the central midfielders of Bajo Husidic and Sebastian Legette. I think these two guys have combined to complete like 90% of their passes. And look, its completion percentage isn't everything, but it's not nothing. And even if you're completing just sideways passes, you're pulling a team around a little bit, and you're creating new angles to attack and potentially slip guys like Landon Donovan or Emmanuel Boateng through. And that's the Galaxy know how to use that. And I think that Colorado needs first and foremost to disrupt that, and that's how they are going to use Jermaine Jones, I think, from the start. He's going to be right up in their grill trying to make life miserable. That's one. And the other thing is Colorado needs to figure out a way to get behind Ashley Cole on that right side. And I think the other guy who will be coming into the starting lineup specifically with that job is Marlon Hairston. And he almost actually did it in leg one, right? Yeah, have your drink. Ashley Cole had a really great game against RSL, wasn't quite as good against Colorado, but still very good. And it doesn't matter, because you could still beat him for pace. Colorado have to use that to their advantage.
If you bring Jermaine Jones into the starting lineup, Doyle, do you keep Dylan Powers in the starting lineup? What did you see from him in leg one, and what would you want to see in leg two?
I would keep Powers in the starting lineup, because one of the things that you need to do if you're Colorado is get the ball to those flanks quickly. And accurately, because you got to keep the game moving from the middle to the sideline in order to punish both Cole and Rogers. And Powers is, you know, one of the best deliverers of a long ball in the game. Michael Azira, on the other hand, much different player. So I would sit Azira for Powers, have him play deeper, and just spread the game out.
Doyle, Kevin Doyle, Baji, is that a question mark? I mean, look, they got to get some goals from somebody, and to be frank, Kevin Doyle hasn't been that guy.
It should be a question mark. I don't know that it is for Pablo Mastroianni, but for us sitting here where we have no pressure on the things we say, it should be, because Baji was playing well. He was playing confidently, and for a team that doesn't have anyone who's an automatic finisher, if you've got a guy in form, you've got to ride it as long as you can. And if Doyle starts scoring, then it's Doyle's spot. But I think Bajie was giving you that. I think he's athletic, so you have the opportunity where if you can get them on the counter and you can get them opened up a little
bit. He can get him behind Yelovin Dam, you think. And
you know Daniel Stairs has made mistakes against speed and has gotten caught.
And Yelovin Dam, I mean, I love the guy, but he loves to roam. He is not what you would call a stay-at-home central defender. So we'll see. There's some big questions for Pablo Mascherano to answer. He's got some things ahead of him. I don't think, you know, it's not like Vieira and Pareja where you say, oh, you went too defensive. They're down 1-0. They specialize in 1-0 victories at home, basically. Like, this is setting up for extra time, I think, of all the games.
They may have been too defensive, but that's their identity. But
right.
They still think they may have been. But, yes, you're
sure,
right.
Sure, you may have to throw. But he's not going to go throw caution to the wind in the first minute.
Right.
Maybe 65th, 70th if you start getting
desperate.
Even
then, but if you're down 1-0, you're still...
Just need one.
I mean, if you haven't given up a goal by 70 minutes, you're looking for that one, and you get to play that extra time at home. Away goals go away, so I don't know that that's the worst thing in the world.
It's not.
For this team, I think they should feel comfortable with the situation they're in. I think their fans should be pretty excited about this one.
2 p.m. Eastern, ESPN and TSN on Sunday. That gets the day started. Before that, as I said, Kellen Rowe, myself, Russ Thaler. Watch the pregame show. We have a lot of fun. It's good stuff. MLS's Facebook Live there. The nightcap, 9 p.m. Eastern, FS1 and TSN. Dallas, Seattle, Toyota Stadium, a 3-0 aggregate lead for the Seattle Sounders. They are feeling pretty good about themselves, especially because Brian Schmetzer just got the full-time job for this club. He will be the head coach. No more interim tag for him going into 2017. But Pareja's got to throw the caution to the wind here. I mean, you can't be loose because one goal really tanks you, but you got to find a way to get numbers forward, and you have to find a way to get an early goal. I think if you don't get that early goal, all of a sudden I think the morale starts dipping and it starts feeling like an impossible
but the question
task.
Is okay, so you say they have to throw caution to the wind. What does that mean? Does that mean starting Tesho for one of the attacking three? Does that mean starting Mauro Rosales?
I think you should go 4-4-2, Arruti and Tesho up top, Berrios on one wing, Acosta and probably either Mauro in the middle or Mauro Rosales out wide, because you need his service on set
pieces. So you're saying in a 4-4-2 that you're putting Mauro Rosales out there along with Barrios on the wing.
I don't think Rosales can be in the middle, so just take that as a grain of salt. He has to be wide because he can't defend that open space.
Right, and
in the
then
middle.
You play
so
two.
So it's Guerrero and Acosta.
Right.
I mean, that's the way I see it, Doyle, is it, I'm just looking for solutions for them, a way to generate attack here. I think somebody has to be out there that can deliver on the set pieces, because if they're going to come back, at least one of those goals is going to come off a dead ball.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I do think they should probably go back to the 4-2-3-1, though, with Rosales in the middle, because, look, it's what they do best, and they can still generate some attack out of that without – leaving themselves horribly exposed, which is what I think the 4-4-2 would do if you have Rosales out there, and certainly the 5-3-2, which, I mean, it's hard for me to even think about this too much, because the series is over. If Dallas goes out there trying to, you know, throw numbers forward and get a goal, there will be a Ladero through ball to Jordan Morris on the break, and suddenly Dallas needs to get 5 goals. It's done.
The one thing I do like about what you were saying, and this is, obviously Doyle's right, so it's over. If you put Barrios on the wing, I think Jovan Jones's nature is to attack. So you might be able to find some open space for him to work out there if he's on the right wing. Because they're going to tell Jones not to. You're up 3-0. You don't need to. But I think as the game opens up, it's in his nature to push forward. And it's a reason that they've been very good over the last 2 months. So there might be some space to operate there, could mean nothing.
Right. Look, Doyle, you're right. If you play Rosales in the wing, he's going to get run past. I just don't know what your recourse is. You have to take chances here. And you're probably right. The 4-2-3 runs the way to go, because if you give up one goal, you're screwed. But I think this game, if FC Dallas is going to have a chance, is going to be about Hedges and Zimmerman and Figueroa scrambling. They're going to have some plays where they either get lucky or they make just an incredible defensive play.
Well, it'll be interesting.
That's going to have to be the case.
Because while they're down by so much, I mean, he could come out and play it straight and just play whatever lineup. I don't think he'll play Atiba Harris and Ryan Hollingshead, but play a normal, like Doyle said, 4-2-3-1 and maybe just see how the first 45 goes and then come out in the second half and really take a risk. If they're up 1-0 or 2-0 at halftime, I mean, you're in it, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, you are.
Right.
We saw with Columbus 2 years ago when they got blown out by New England twice. I think the second leg, they went after it, and once you give up that goal, it's over.
Right.
So maybe you don't want to kill yourself. Maybe you want to see if you can get Seattle to get nervous a little bit as the game
maybe steal a set
on.
Piece in the first half and then see what the second brings.
Everything, every time the whistle blows, you're pounding a ball
right.
in the box.
It's just too bad that this series is in this place, because what FC Dallas has been the whole season has been an entertaining team, one that's kind of gone against the odds in the sense that, hey, will Mauro stay healthy? Wow, he did, and now he's an MVP candidate. Can they hold on to Fabian? Oh, he took off, and they didn't have time to replace him, and yet they still marched on to the Open Cup and the Shield. It's kind of been an against-the-odds season, a magical season for them. And to go into this game in which you're thinking, you know what, the one playoff game you got at home and you're kind of a dead duck, that's a tough place to be. And I feel for Dallas fans, but look, got to handle that business in the first leg. The Sounders did it. They're up 3-0 on aggregate going on the road. 9 p.m. Eastern, FS1 and TSN for that Dallas-Seattle Sounders game. Before we go to the break and get into the mailbag, guys, by the way, we have a great email about Armando Cooper and CONCACAF. And we talked a little about it with Larson. There are some discussions to be had around the award nominees. So we'll get to that in a second, but I'm going to put you on the spot yet again. Who's moving on? I'm just going to throw out Seattle for all of us. You know, speak
yeah.
now, unless you have a different opinion. That means Colorado and LA is the one in question. Dave, I'll start with you. What do you think?
I think Colorado. I picked them before. I think they had the first leg they had to have. Once again, I thought he could have played a little bit more of an attacking lineup, but 1-0 going home is fine. I think they get either a I think they're going to win it in extra time. So I think they're going to get a 2-1 win, but the goals will come in.
Who the goals come from?
Sorry, 2-0 win.
Yeah,
in extra
who do
time.
The goals come from?
You want me to pick names?
Yeah, what names, man?
Axel Hulberg and Dominic Baggi.
Woo!
I think a set-piece goal and an open field goal.
Okay. All right, get the little 6-7 up in the business. Doyle, do you agree, or are we going to see Race to Says continue?
No, I mean, we started off this show with me and Gossman going at it head to head, but
Clash of locked, the Titans.
We're lockstep right now. I think I just think Colorado's too good on set pieces, and I think Schubert gets one, and I'll say Doyle gets another. So it's 2-0 after extra time.
All about the Doyles, huh? Mm-hmm. I'm gonna be the taquito to you guys as General Sal right now, and I'm gonna come the other direction. It's Galaxy, man. The Race to Says continues. I think in the central midfield and in the center back positions, they're going to be consistent once again in this game. I don't think Colorado will throw them off enough, and I just think Jermaine Jones, had he been playing regularly for the last, I don't know, 4 months, even a couple games, he's in a better rhythm and has a better capability to disrupt them, and the team's more familiar with him. I just think LA's going to have too much. They get one goal from something, just that one little moment, Giovanni Dos Santos.
So you don't
maybe.
Think it's going to be explosive from
them? No, I don't think so at all. I think they'll get their goal, and Colorado just won't have enough.
You think they start Alan Gordon?
I would on the road, and I would do that because I think that Bruce will be confident that they'll go there and get a result. They've done nothing but get draws this season, all season long. Draws, 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 draws. I think it's probably a 1-1 draw. They move on. They'll be happy with it. They'll get a rest. Maybe Keno comes back. They'll figure that out in the international break, and the Race to Sace will continue. That's our thoughts. Let us know what you think at Extra Time Radio, extratime at MLSsoccer.com. When we come back, a really good email, as I said, Armando Cooper, the next CONCACAF camp counselor, perhaps, maybe, I don't know, and then some award talk.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at MLSsoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
I can't keep on losing you over complications. Gone too soon. Wait, we was just hanging. I can't seem to hold on to.
Back now, Extra Time Radio. After Sunday, four teams gone too soon for their respective fan bases. It starts at 2 p.m. Eastern. Colorado, LA, rolls on through the day. The first two on ESPN and TSN, the final two on FS1 and TSN. Full coverage, full schedule, everything you need. MLSsoccer.com. All the games right here on SiriusXM FC Channel 85 as well. So tune in while you're driving around. Maybe get home, watch the rest of them. Do how you do. What we got, Dave?
I was going to say one thing before we jump into this
sure.
glorious mailbag, is that there isn't that one team we all said coming into it that's an obvious favorite, which means that at this point, I don't think there's a team. Of course, Dallas has this injury. A fan base that didn't feel like they had a chance to win the cup.
Yeah.
Where last round, I think Philadelphia and RSL, it was a long shot. Maybe even Sporting KC, but they have that experience. And so that's, I think, tough for the fan base.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. And certainly Dallas didn't take advantage of their opportunity in Seattle. 8 minutes and, you know, 10 months of your season kind of go kaput as it pertains to MLS Cup. But they still have the double. They still have an opportunity. It would take one heck of a result. We'll see if they can get it.
They could still get a Dave Goss treble if they win. What's CCL. The Dave? Well, CCL has to count. I understand the calendar doesn't totally make sense. But
when? So are we actually – that's not officially a Dave Goss treble. Is that just – Dave Goss treble TM, or have you
– No. I don't like to do stuff like that because I like for my thoughts to be universally allowed.
Okay.
Let's talk CONCACAF. Evan Ream emails in, avid listener to – Extra Time Radio is how he puts it.
Actually said he was going to not listen to us ever again if we didn't read this.
Which, it didn't matter that he said that because once I read this email, I didn't even know who wrote it. I was going to read it anyway.
Gotcha.
I'm a few days late on this, but watching the MLS playoffs, it occurred to me that TFC midfielder Armando Cooper might be the most CONCACAF player in the league. Everything's a mental game for him, from simple challenges and time-wasting to head games and simulating. It's actually fairly impressive to watch when you think about it. So is there a more CONCACAF player in MLS than Cooper? If so, who? What about in CONCACAF? Cooper, Joel Campbell, Carlos Ruiz, and Rafa Marquez all step out onto the same field. Who gets whom sent off and for what?
I mean, Ruiz is the granddaddy. He's you know, El Viejo. He's definitely number one. He's leading our camp. I think there's a TM on CONCACAF camp. I think I went out and did that.
Right, but I think Temo has a...
Yeah,
has a
Temo
shout
has a shout,
there.
But Temo's not still playing, is he?
Did we not mention Blas?
Yeah, Blas is in there. He's always in there. He's a given.
Blas is at the top of the heap for me, like even slightly ahead of Pescadito.
Okay, okay.
Doyle is a big
in his
Blas.
Early prime Pescadito. How about that? Not the now Pescadito that's kind of been through the, you know, the ups and downs and is just trying to get us some games in.
Has had a stake or two.
Right, right. Let's see. I'm trying to think of other guys that on these playoff teams at least that would you could file them under that. I think sometimes Felipe is pretty CONCACAF.
Now mm-hmm. he's not.
He doesn't hail. He doesn't hail from CONCACAF. I also think same goes for Hassoun Kamara.
And we saw Dwyer.
Dom Dwyer is very CONCACAF-y. You're right. He's got some of that in him.
He just went and got some surgery, so he can come back and be as CONCACAF as
Does
he was.
Does LA have any CONCACAF in him?
I think a lot of our friends south of the border would argue that Landon's very CONCACAF-y.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
And yeah,
Alan Gordon is in his way.
I mean, the Bash brothers were as CONCACAF as it gets.
I think Aurelien Colin has some CONCACAF in him.
Yeah.
He definitely does. Yep. Let's see. From these other playoff teams, the Rapids. I mean, Sam Cronin, no CONCACAF there.
Jermaine Jones is pure CONCACAF.
Yeah. Yeah.
He will go in and chop you down, and then 2 seconds later, you know, a 50-50 challenge, he will roll on the ground for as long as it takes to get into that ref's head. Yeah,
no doubt about that. I'm trying to think. Toronto FC, we got Armando. Anybody else? I mean, Will Johnson, I think, has got some in him for sure. Mm-hmm. He's going to talk to you a lot. He's going to come in late some. He's going to act incredulous if anything's called against him.
Nobody does incredulous better than Will Johnson.
NYCFC, maybe that's what they're missing here. Because I don't think Matarita's, he doesn't quite have that, maybe a little bit too nice for CONCACAF. Their center backs definitely aren't.
Iraola has insane moments, but they're normally passing to the wrong team.
Right, and that's not really what we're looking for here. I mean, if anybody's going to have it in him, it's not Tommy Mack, it's not Harrison, it's not Lampard. I mean,
if anybody's
going to have it, I was just going to say it's David Villa, for sure.
Mikey Lopez, when he plays, he's pretty CONCACAF-y.
Yeah, he's got some CONCACAF to him. If you want to send us your definition of CONCACAF or you want to have something we're going to send to Webster's, hit us up at Extra Time Radio, extratimeinlandsoccer.com.
Real quick, last point, MVP. Sebastian Giovinco, we already mentioned
right.
it
with
we
Kurt talked
Larson.
About it. Doyle, what do you think of that one?
I think it was ridiculous that he wasn't in the top three. For me, he's the MVP. I know he missed a few games, but he's the best player. He's on a team that is nowhere near as good without him. He came up big in big spots. He carried them for a long time when other guys were hurt. He is the most valuable player.
The other, I think, Big one that's been mentioned by people is Tim Howard being in for goalkeeper of the year and not playing the full season on a team that was good defensively before he got there. Do either of you feel passionately about that?
I would have put in David Bingham. I think David Bingham deserved that honor. And I just, you know, I understand. I get like Nicholas Lodero, a newcomer of the year. I fully understand that because I didn't think that list was as strong and Lodero has been such a difference maker. But full course of the year, I understand that the Rapids were much better than San Jose, but I just thought David Bingham, I thought he deserved that spot there. The rest of it, I don't see a ton of problems with. You know, we talked about maybe Drew Moore into defender. I think the rookie of the year is spot on. Jordan Morris, I'd be shocked if it wasn't a landslide. Quick on an MVP before we get out of here. My theory is you got two votes in that. So I think a lot of people picked David Villa and then one Red Bull, and that kept Giovinco out. So I think that Kleshin and Bradley Wright Phillips are going to split that, and I think Villa will end up as the MVP. That's my guess right now.
That sounds logical, and I think that was one of the issues. It's not an issue because you play right on the same team and you're a phenomenal team and you win the East. With having two guys like that, though, is you know that it's going to take away from each other. Villa's the only one on his team that's in the conversation.
Yep. Lots of games this weekend. Make sure you tune in. All the coverage right here on MLSsoccer.com. The second legs of the 2016 Audi MLS Playoffs Conference semifinals. It starts at 2 p.m. on ESPN and TSN, and it ends at 9 p.m. on FS1 and TSN. All the coverage right here at MLSsoccer.com. You can listen to them all right here as well. SiriusXM FC, Channel 85. With that, we'll catch you on Monday.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.